Hey guys, welcome to Cinepile. You have now made it to, what is it? Is this episode 4?
Mm-hmm.
This is episode 4. We have finally made it to episode 4. We are on a little bit of a hiatus from episode 3. I personally blame eating too much turkey in the holiday times, kind of throwing everyone's schedule a little bit winky wonky. Today's going to be a little bit different. It's just going to be me and Kyle. We're going to just kind of be riffing it. No really exact themes or exact movies that we're going to go on and on about. Really just going to be Kyle and I talking about some movies that we've seen because our good buddy Neil is down in Houston with his lovely girlfriend Bree. So we're just going to be talking about movies that we recommend, movies that we love, like we always do, but we'll still be as entertaining as we always promise to be. So we'll start off with the movie that I'm going to recommend. It is really recent. I just think it's stupid if you don't see it. Like, I honestly think you're a dumb person. if you watch 5 minutes of this movie and you turn it off, and you go, nah, not for me. That's just, you're a dumb person, and you're gonna get tossed into a big giant swimming pool that's been emptied, filled with razor blades, and you just are gonna just die a horrible death. But so Nightcrawler, the premise of it is it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, and he is a Nightcrawler. And what that is a person who just late at night, they go around and they just film horrific things that happen. So like car crashes, murder, shootings, things like that. So that the media the next morning has something to actually report.
Some sort of sensational image for them to...
Yeah, sensational image.
Yeah. Because all this crime and violence and whatnot is drawing in ratings, and there's all sorts of social commentary going on in this film.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let that deter you, because it is first and foremost, I think, entertaining.
Well, the thing that will bring you in is A, the cinematography, which most people don't care about because they don't really notice it, but more so is the dialogue that Jake Gyllenhaal has in his unblinkingly train never power stopping dialogue that he just goes through. It's just like, if you could quantify torque into dialogue towards just like that power off the line that just ceasingly can carry an entire load of a movie, he does it on his own back, and it's fascinating. And his own dialogue, as well as the scenes and the other characters that he interacts with, have comparable levels of dialogue. But it's a wonderful movie that if you want to see something that is actually not a spectacle, something that is about characterization, something that's about drama, that's a thriller, that's interesting, that looks at our own society, that also looks into the depths and darkness of our own souls, as well as our own society and peoples. This movie covers all of it, and it was highly underappreciated, I think, in a big way. And it allows you to see not severely underappreciated, but 9 times out of 10, if you walk up to people and go, hey, did you see Nightcrawler? That fucking refrigerator.
That's exactly what they would say.
But I could harp on it more and more, but I want to know more so what you have to recommend, Kyle.
Well, Nightcrawler is so interesting. It's hard to
We'll swing back to it.
Yeah, let's swing back to it.
Okay.
I saw In the Heart of the Sea last night,
and
I would not wholeheartedly. There are some scenes I would not recommend.
Just a left ventricle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just would not. Just the one chamber of that heart was working or was entertaining. You know, take your pick. So, but that brings me to one of my favorites, which is another naval adventure that actually does the job, Master and Commander.
I was about to say, is it Master and Commander?
Yes. Yeah. Master and Commander.
I've never seen it.
It's wonderful.
Am I an idiot for not seeing it?
I wouldn't call you an idiot, but I definitely think you're missing out.
Do you think I should be thrown into a swimming pool filled with razor blades?
No, I don't think anybody really should have that enacted upon them.
Except
for maybe someone like, I don't know, Dolores Umbridge or someone we really hate from...
I don't know who Dolores Umbridge is.
Okay. They're on the nerdy side. It's Harry Potter.
Oh, that's why I don't know.
Yep.
I'm not a Harry Potter person, people. I'm sorry. I just can't get into it.
You're not a Harry Potter person, people? Like, you don't like people who...
I don't like people who are really into Harry Potter who are like still adults. Like people who like Harry Potter, cool. It was a good book series from what I understand. People liked it. Awesome. But you really just can't be like, oh, Jesus, it's like this spellbinding amazing thing. I'm like, no, like you were young and it was influential and it was really good. Lord of the Rings is better.
Not as a reading experience.
I know.
But definitely as a film experience. sense.
I know. I'm such a Lord of the Rings
fan. But speaking of Lord of the Rings, Return of the King came out the same year as Master and Commander.
But before we lose thing, tell me more about Master and Commander.
Well, that's what I'm getting back to.
Oh, yeah. You're two steps ahead
of
me.
Lord of the Rings took everything at the Academy Awards that year. Mm-hmm. So Master and Commander didn't really get any. And
got snubbed.
Yeah. From an influence standpoint, Master and Commander isn't really going to influence anything. It's not going to have any impact or on pop culture or anything like that in the way that Lord of the Rings did.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful adventure with way more to it than just being a historical action film.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some really beautiful moments, and it was one of the few productions ever allowed to actually film on the Galapagos Islands.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so one of my favorite characters in the film is Paul Bettany. He is basically Charles Darwin's equivalent on the ship. And yeah, he gets to go to the Galapagos. And you see him studying all these wonderful animals and the swimming iguanas, are they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the huge turtles.
That must have been such a mind boggle for those people.
Yeah.
Just be like, wait, what? What? Like, now I'm on the internet and it's like 10 deep sea creatures you've never seen before. I'm like, oh, right. Yep, seen them all. Boring.
Oh, same footage of the giant squid? Okay.
All the gulper eel? Yeah, I think I saw that when I was 10. I'm really like, you know how like there was always that dinosaur kid and the airplane kid? I was the deep sea marine biology kid.
It's unique.
To where I was like, well, like I like marine biology, and then I just saw like I think it was like an episode of Life with David Attenborough, and he did like the deep sea, you know, fishies. I was like, Britishy? How can I make this Britishy? But and then ever since when I was a little kid, I was always obsessed with like deep sea life and everything like that.
Are you a big fan of The Abyss?
Yeah. I love The Abyss. I thought The Abyss was so cool.
Yeah. It is so cool.
But with Master and Commander, is it... Because I know it's 3 hours long, so it's kind of asking...
No, it's not 3 hours.
I thought it was 3 hours long. I was under the impression it was like stupid long. It's definitely
over two. It feels longer than it is in a good way. It feels like they built this world and this cast of characters.
Oh, cool. I like it.
It feels like you're living with them on the ship for a little while there. And that's something in the Heart of the Sea is just wholly lacking. It's lacking a lot of things, but that was one of the big ones.
The lack?
The lack.
The lack.
Different kind of lack.
Different kind of lack.
Yeah. Ugh.
Really?
Although there's
in the Heart of the Sea is just a man fighting his own giant penis. He's wrestling with his own masculinity. Moby Dick is really just a giant white wiener. I'm Cooper Carr.
Oh, I bet that blog, if you were to make that essay, that would get
hits. I would be so interested to see if I would get any kind of adulation from anyone. Chasing Your Own Penis by Cooper Carr.
Through the lens of Hermie Melville.
Yeah, yeah.
Hermie Melville.
Hermie, yeah. It's like, every once in a while I started hanging out with Hermie. It was a good time. This is weird, because not a lot of people know this, but usually Kyle and I share a microphone. But because, like, because Neil's gone, so we're down a person, and we can actually have one person on each mic right now. It's so weird to engage you this way. I'm so used to
it. I feel separated.
I feel very separated by you. We should have like snuggled up and been on the same side of the table. I feel like we're interviewing each other right now. Like that's what it feels like. I just wanted to let everyone know that.
Some sort of circus behind these microphone bars.
Yeah. Well, what would be another good? Okay. So let's swing back to Nightcrawler.
Okay.
So, Nightcrawler being a good movie and the fact of the dialogue and everything like that, the favorite scene that I have in it, which I don't...
Spoilers from this point on. Usually, yeah. With our recommendations, we don't go into spoilers.
Well, but yeah.
From here on out, I wanted to actually discuss it, so we're going to go into things about the film.
Well, you can. I'm still going to be nice to the people a little bit. So, like here's an instance. When he gets to speak with his boss that he's working for at that restaurant...
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, spoilers, rapes her with his words. It's kind of amazing.
And then he does actually rape her, though. Not on camera.
Yeah.
But the whole transaction is about sex.
Yeah, exactly.
He's bargaining.
Yeah.
He's basically backing her into a corner.
He's like, can you afford not to do this? And it's so crazy when it's like, that's what was so great about Jake Gyllenhaal's character. Is he stacks his chips and you don't know how many chips he has till he plays them. Or I guess has his cards until he plays them, rather. And so that was a real amazing part, is when he's like sitting there with Nina and he's sitting there, he's like, no, you can't do this, Nina, like, you can't afford to it. I'm like, did he just kind of like rape her with his words? And I was like, this movie is dark.
I also like how it seems to really boggle his mind that somebody could attempt to make a decision that is, in his way, illogical.
Yeah.
How you were just, you know, quoting him as, no, you can't do that, Nina, because of...
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's I wish I could quote it verbatim right now.
Yeah.
I've only seen it once in theaters.
That would be one of those kind of dialogue things that would almost be kind of fun to read back and forth to each other, to print out that whole scene and, like, mm-hmm. read it back and forth. We should do that later.
And break down why it works.
Yeah.
Because it does work.
Yeah. It works really well. Well, like, and it's funny because I feel like his whole dialogue and his whole experience that he has is kind of like a little ha-ha, poking fun, satirical, just... diatribe against the self-help industry, because he's like, because he'll sit there and be like, well, you really have to realize that when you're looking at yourself, you have to value yourself within a company, other words, you're not going to be able to become useful within a firm. And it sounds like he's quoting paragraphs from bad self-help books,
right? That he is,
that he's taken too far.
Yeah, he's warped them into He's like a fundamentalist of self-help books.
That's the new thing. He's the ISIS of self-help.
Yes.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Did you have any qualms with the film?
No. Like, that's one of those movies where, like, I try to sit there and, like, make it better. But I'm like, they film L.A. in a new, fun, and dynamic style. The characters are all on point. I'm never... ever bored. The only character I guess this would be my only gripe would be his little sidekick that he picks up. He's a little too dumb, but I mean, I wish they would have trumped up him being dumb a bit more, but I think he hints at the fact that he's a high school dropout, and I've met some pretty dumb people in my life, so
you can,
yeah, but just like when
you're, the suspension of disbelief isn't too great.
Yeah, well, just like when he's sitting there being hired by Jake Gyllenhaal's character to be like $35 a night, he's like, okay, man, yeah, that's great, man, yeah, whatever. And I'm just like, you're not gonna look for another job?
Yeah.
And I was like, this is kind of stupid. Because like, he doesn't really hold any power over him except as an employer. And that's not really...
And is, in a weird way, is charisma.
Mm-hmm, yeah, yeah. When he devalues him and kind of makes it into like a mini cult almost in a way.
Yeah.
To where he's like, hey, at any moment, you're going to start seeing it, man. At any moment, you're going to start, this is where the rise is about to happen. You're about to, this company is taking off. And I love how, like, he'll refer to himself. He's like, he addresses him. He was saying, like, reckoning back to the how-to book, that he speaks to him like he speaks to an entire boardroom. You know, like when he's like addressing the future of his like stupid media company that's just one camera and one light, and he's talking about it like it's a multi-million dollar firm. But in kind of a weird way, he's sort of inspiring it in that weird way where he's
an entrepreneur.
Well, yeah, he's at that early 30s where his life is in a point where he's dissatisfied and he decides to make his own luck, kind of thing, like that old adage. And you get to watch it. And you kind of admire him at it because there's this great moment when they play that, the little electronic chords that are very like ethereal towards like, and they really let those notes drew out. I noticed on my fourth or fifth watching of this movie, because it's my favorites. well, no, this was actually when I was just listening to it. Because if anyone doesn't know, I listen to movies at work. So I got tired of listening to podcasts and music at work. And because I just do a lot of like data processing and I don't talk to people too much, I'll just be like, hey, I'll grab my favorite movie and I'll listen to it and see like what the sound design is like, what the dialogue is like, and I'll turn it into a radio program essentially.
That's interesting. I didn't know that about you.
It's something I started like last month. It's not a secret thing. Yeah, ever since I was a young boy listening to Land Before Time. Littlefoot, such a complicated character, orphaned, wanting to take Chomper in as his own just to reconcile his own orphan self. Just got deep with Littlefoot.
You can. It's a deep film.
And Land Before Time is great.
Opens with a tearjerker scene.
Mom, Mom, that will make me cry. That'll make me cry. Oh, with the lightning in the background that echoes. Mm-hmm. That's what I discovered because I watched all the Disney, like, parental deaths. And it's the kid calling out for the kid, echoing into the space.
Kid calling out for the parent?
Yeah. So did I say kid calling out for the kid?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's all
right. Drinking all this water makes me a little loopy. but, yeah, so it's like the kid calling out for the parent, and it always echoes. And then they always have the parent in the forefront to make them even larger than the child. Mm-hmm. And
they're
then,
dwarfing the child.
Yeah, they dwarf the child and, like, you know, making them even more kiddish and, you know, tugging at the dead body and everything like that. Because I thought Simba and Mufasa, like, I thought that was the saddest one. But then I watched Littlefoot's and I was bawling. I was crying. Like, I was just like, oh, okay, Reddit at work. I'll just click on this. And I was like,
we should go watch that after this.
Oh, podcast. Dude, we should totally do that. Can you make a note? Will you write in this? Is this allowed to write in?
Yes.
Okay. But what was the other thing that we said to write a note on?
Don't know.
Okay, so anyway, so I will listen to my favorite movies so that I can pick up particular dialogues. Because I think when you do that, you're forced to focus. I've actually done the exact same. Well, the exact opposite, sorry. And I've watched Nightcrawler without any audio.
That's interesting. That sounds more intriguing to me.
I mean, because you're DP-ish. Yeah. But also, I'm just kind of forced to not look at stuff at work. So, and I did that with Drive as well. So, like, mm-hmm. I think, like, Only God Forgives. I bet a lot of Renfin films would be great without, you know, it doesn't have any dialogue really anyway. So, might as well just kibosh it. Right. But it makes you pick up a lot of stuff. You're like, wow, I didn't realize how much the camera moves. You're like, I did it with Up in the Air with George Clooney. And, like, the amount of dolly work that is in Up in the Air is phenomenal. Like, just constantly it's strafing to the left and right. And I was like, did they have to set up dolly tracks for every single one of these shots? Like, that's insane. But,
sure did.
Yeah. But, you know, that's what I've been doing in just to try.
So you were talking about a couple different notes chiming in Night Watch and what that signified.
Not Night Watch. Nightcrawler.
What is Nightwatch?
Nightwatch, that's Jake Gyllenhaal and that Spanish guy, and they're both cops.
No, that's End of Watch.
That's End of Watch. Damn.
Nightwatch, I think, is Michael Keaton. Maybe.
But okay,
in Nightcrawler.
Yeah, but so in Nightcrawler, like, I just think all the dialogue and everything like that is just spellbinding. It has it's hard to describe. It's so hard to put things into words for me, but I feel like dialogue in a lot of ways is what entices you, and the characters are the actual gravity that pull you in and keep you there to listen to the dialogue. Whereas I think in Nightcrawler, it's the exact same. Well, the exact opposite, sorry. So it's the exact opposite, where the dialogue is a gravity, and really you're pulled in by the characters and who they are. And they get kind of boring because, I mean, what's Jake Gyllenhaal? He's just a field news reporter, really. There's nothing special, anything about that. But his dialogue is mesmerizing, and there is no escape velocity to get away from him that you could even think of. You have to watch where this guy's going, mm-hmm. and what's he going to say next to justify what he's done, what he's going to do, or what he's planning to do. And it's just, I really like Nightcrawler.
Yeah, I can tell. I got the impression that the music was really trying to... the audience knew he wasn't a hero, but it was like the music didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And so his successes were... They had uplifting music.
Yeah, that's what it was. Every single time he takes a risk...
Yeah.
He moves a body at a certain scene so that he can get a better angle. And so he goes up the cliff a little bit. Remember, and then he holds the camera above him. And, like, that's really the... I think that's probably the most important shot right there. Because it's like, this is above me. Like, this is, he's using the God angle to view this guy. Like, he became God in his own mind, I think, in that shot. And then once he's doing that, once he's taking that big risk, it's this uplifting, just like you said, like that, like, just like really nice, calm, smooth, fun mm-hmm. guitar that's bright. And every time he took a risk, I noticed that that was like his theme song, essentially, that they took, but only when he took a risk to better himself. And it was very interesting.
Well, better himself in his own mind. In our mind, yeah. He's losing his sense of morality.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, he didn't even start the film with a sense of morality.
Yeah.
But every risk that he takes, you realize more and more how much little he cares about his decisions morally. It's all about how it's like an Ayn Rand type thing. It's like, how can I get ahead?
Yeah, exactly. It was a very capitalistic.
On himself.
Yeah, it seemed like an anti-almost capitalistic kind of thing. Toria was just like, capitalism in its purest sense is someone pushing through everyone, no matter what, to seek out your own
regardless
goals.
Regardless of morality.
Yeah, regardless of morality. And I like that little head nod and just like, hey, this is a little cautious tale of like, not to be a purist and not to be a sociopath, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. It's going on the Cinepile wall.
I would call it a good movie.
Oh.
I think what took it back.
What would you put it on the Anderson scale, singers?
On the Anderson
scale? On the Anderson scale, remember? Mm. 1 through 10? If anybody remembers, the Anderson scale is our scale that we have 1 to 10. 10 being an absolutely perfect movie, 1 being horrible, can't even watch it.
Yeah. 5. 10 is unattainable.
5 is an average okie doke movie. For instance, I put Ninja Turtles 1, the one that Michael Bay produced, at a 4.
That's pretty high.
That's pretty high, but I mean, you can still watch the damn thing. I still watched it.
Yeah. I would probably put Nightcrawler at a 7.
Cool. I'll stab you in your sleep. It's okay.
It's okay. It's fine. The reason being that at times I wish, to go back to the music, I wish the music acknowledged what the audience knew. I wish that it acknowledged it. Some point, maybe I need to go back and listen to it. I didn't get the impression that the movie ever really acknowledged that we kind of hated this guy.
Yeah.
We hated what he was doing.
Yeah, there never was, like, they never turned him into an ominous, like, creature. But I think that was kind of the mental game of it all, was that at the end of it, or toward the middle of it, you were kind of, in a weird way, rooting for him by still watching it. Because you're just like, how far can this guy go? Like, what else can he accomplish?
I guess, yeah. But that goes to my second complaint, which is that he's never really challenged enough. Everything that comes his way works out for him.
That's true. He's never, like, having to frantically, like, try to fix something.
Yeah, he's never really, like, all of the decisions he makes are the right ones. And, spoiler alert, he gets away with everything. There was never any doubt in my mind that it would go any other way.
Yeah.
Everything just seems like the second you do have some doubt. Yeah,
there wasn't a strong enough of a conflict. Because I think the only conflict was...
The conflict is...
Well, was that guy. That guy who was who had the two vans.
Bill Paxton?
Yeah, Bill Paxton. And he had the two vans. And that was like the conflict, was that he started getting all the footage. And he was like, oh, well, I'm going to cut your brakes in your car. And then you're going to crash and die.
Yeah.
And then it was just like... Well, that was pretty quick. And, like, you know, there wasn't, like, you know... But that's, like, him. Tori's like, it was neat. It was clean. He could have sat there and he could have broken into his house and choked him to death. But, like, that's not him. He's like...
Well, that wouldn't even solve my complaint with it either.
Okay. How would you then go about it?
It needs to be something... Like, the conflict doesn't... The conflict as of now comes entirely, I think, from... the audience thinking about what they would do in like a moral situation, a moral conundrum. Do you move the body to get the better shot? Do you do things like that? Where he always takes the selfish decision.
Mm-hmm.
There's the conflict between what the audience expects or what the audience wants to happen, I think.
Okay.
And the audience, to be completely fair, the audience wants him to move the body. We expect him to move the body, and that's what he does. And then, yeah, it works for him. Yeah. I need that you introduce the police, who are totally ineffective.
Yeah. Which the police should have been introduced a little bit earlier, I think, maybe.
I'm also fine with that. There's just, like, the smallest bit of tension, but there's never any reason to think that he would ever get caught.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he's not having to, like, he's not staying, like, one inch ahead of the fuse. He's already sitting there at the bottom with scissors going, like, oh, no, I got this.
Yeah. There's real tension for me in that. But the tension doesn't need to come from something like police, because if you want to say the police are ineffective, I mean, that's kind of cool. What you expect from a film like this is the police to be, you know, just a step behind him every time.
Yeah.
And it's okay if he outsmarts them. But think about Victoria, that film we saw. It's from Germany.
Constant
There's a
burning.
Point where the car doesn't start.
Yeah.
It's something entirely outside the character's control that's just immediate tension.
Yeah.
Like, what if something like that were to have happened to him? What if he'd have been in a situation where he, like...
Yeah, where all of his cards, he can't play any.
It's, and yeah, or it's just luck or perseverance or something that, like...
Or he has to dig deeper into... Yeah, exactly. Or, like, luck with Victorious where the guy fixed it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But where... Yeah, it's a very good point. It's a very good point.
I think a little bit of
I love
that,
this podcast.
I think something... Just more tension for me would have brought it into...
Yeah,
like the realm of greatness, almost.
Yeah, it did seem at times like almost a little asleep, and like kind of like dreamy and surreal at sometimes. To and I think that was also like complemented with the score, but yeah, you're right in the fact that his character could have actually grown more if he would have actually met with true opposition, and yeah, that's a really good point. You're so smart, Kyle. How'd you get so smart and so handsome? That's because of all those books you read. Now, Kyle, when you read all those books, do you go to audible.com? Because if you go to audible.com/Cinepile podcast, that'd be so great. We need sponsors.
Not sponsors?
Really. Sponsor, maybe. No, no plural.
We'll yeah. But yeah, Nightcrawler, definitely recommend it.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's more fun for me sometimes to... And I don't like to call it picking at, but for me to try to understand what works or what doesn't work about a good film like this.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of people really enjoyed it, and I think it has a lot of merit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fun to see where, I don't know, not where it fell short, because I don't, yeah, I guess where it fell short or where it can be improved upon is a more positive half cup half full way of looking at it.
I like that. No, you had some really solid points, but I say we talk about Victoria a little bit.
Okay.
So you mentioned Victoria. In case anyone isn't familiar with Victoria, I don't blame you. But if you're an avid listener, you would hear it on the second episode. I talk about it. But,
Victoria.
So, yeah, Victoria. Yeah, Victoria, go for it, Kyle.
It's,
you can wrap it up a lot faster.
One of these, it's the only film I've ever seen that's done in one take. It's not a Birdman. It's not a Birdman style. Although, I mean, that's incredibly technically proficient and way more impressive cinematography-wise than this film. The staging is really impressive. And so it's 2 hours and 20 minutes or so, all one take. It sounds like a gimmick, but I wouldn't say it is. I think it was... Cooper and I both talked about after seeing the film that it's kind of a roller coaster in how you like or dislike it or love it throughout the film. We liked it at first. We went down to almost hated it because you forget what editing can do to the pace of
film. Oh, yeah, when they're just walking down the sidewalk to get somewhere, and I'm like, oh my God, yes, this is kind of brutal.
You really feel how it's one take in those moments, but then it just... All of the action starts to rise.
Yeah, and it makes you forget about all of it.
Rise, yeah. So, highly recommend it.
Even just the opening shot just was like, you're going to be in an unconventional movie. Because the opening shot is like, it's like an out of focus, overly long take on in a club. But I thought it was one of the best ways to introduce Victoria to everyone. And I was like, this is so great. But I don't know why she was partying at a club by herself.
Well, that's part of her character. She's
just kind of a lonely.
Yeah, well, she's been in Berlin working. She's from Barcelona, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Barcelona.
She's been working at a cafe, and she's been there for, I think, several months now, and she hasn't created a life there yet. She doesn't have any real group of friends or anything like that. So when she meets this, she's drunk as well. When she meets up with this group of guys when they're leaving this club, she tags along with them, and it's she meets new people, she introduces a level of risk into her life.
Yeah.
I don't want
to. She was very type A and she was looking to find type B's. Yeah, I think this is less of a. This is more of a.
Nightcrawler is on Netflix now.
Yeah.
You can go watch that at your leisure. You've heard about it, surely, if you're listening to.
Yeah, if you want to go see Victoria, if anyone's listening right now, you'd have to go to an art house. We saw it at.
We were at the Angelica.
At the Angelica Mockingbird Station. It's really great. I mean, it was, what, 2 hour movie? It's all one take. It's really spellbinding in that fact to where you never get a cut. The camera is always following action. Yeah, it does get a little bit of a lull, but it makes up for it in creating the investment that you have with these characters by never leaving them. So it pays back in so much greater dividends than you would get with, you know, just stupid cutting back and forth looking at Mark Ruffalo and some other A-star actors where it's like, here's this like kind of mumblecore, one take, realistic idea that's carried through really impressively considering how long they, I mean, a 2.5 hour long take.
The staging alone
and like the amount of like walkie chatter, I couldn't imagine, like, go, get that car out of the way. Okay, are we pulling focus? Are we doing this? Do we have that? Like, the batteries are low. Like, we need to do that. Like, I can't imagine the logistical issue. But of course, it gets done in Germany.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, don't worry. Does it involve numbers? Because we're very, very good with the numbers.
To talk about the lull you mentioned, I don't want to sound too pretentious, but you know that quote about being in the darkest valley to understand what it's to be like at the highest mountain?
No, I don't, Kyle, but that's a great quote. Thanks for sharing it.
Well, it's kind of like we need to really let the tension just kind of simmer down here, mm-hmm. you know, give you this kind of lull
yeah.
where you're almost bored to make you really feel your heart pumping
yeah.
once the shit hits
the fan. Because when the shit hits the fan, like, that's when we kind of looked at each other and we're like, I'm into this right
yeah,
now.
It's like
this
it does a bit of a magic trick in that you don't even realize how invested you
yeah,
are
exactly.
until it's there.
Yeah, into the denouement.
Huh?
Nah, I'd say definitely go see Victoria. Definitely go see Nightcrawler. Master and Commander, what would you rate that on the Anderson scale for yourself?
For myself?
Yeah,
I would put it up at probably an 8.
Cool, so you think it's better than Nightcrawler. Okay, whatever. That's fine. I'd agree that Nightcrawler is a 7.5.
I think it's so much more consistent in its vision it's going for.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, there's still plenty you can read into for the film. I think there's almost too much you can read into with Nightcrawler. Like, we could have hours and hours of, which is a good thing in a way, mm-hmm. hours and hours of discussion about what it means for the media.
Yeah.
And what does it mean about our portrayal of violence? What does it mean about us as an audience? What does all this mean? Blah, blah, blah. But in the end, Master and Commander is really, it really has all come together. No part feels...
it doesn't have to be interpreted. It just is what it is.
No, I'm not going at that. I'm saying, like, no part feels separate in a way. Like, mm-hmm. for me, the score in Nightcrawler, too crazy. How am I comparing these movies right now? But the score in Nightcrawler...
because you're a cinephile, brother. That's what we do.
I notice it. Mm-hmm. And I notice it as something created separately from the movie itself.
Yeah,
in a way.
It seems like separate elements, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
It feels like I can hear the statement, or I can hear what I interpret as the statement they're trying to make with the music.
Okay.
Whereas for me, Master and Commander in a film like that, that really, really draws me in, is something that feels complete. It doesn't feel like things were created in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So, I don't know if I'm pulling that out of my
ass.
These two completely different films.
I think... all films can be compared. We could talk about Land Before Time and Master and Commander. We could build that bridge. Would that be a safe bridge to walk on? Probably not. But we could build it.
But maybe we can make it to the other side.
Hey, brother. And we can do it together. Well, I think that's a good time to wrap things up, because we were wanting to keep things a little bit short because we are down a man. But just remember that when you're watching a movie, there's always more going on than what you can see. So open your eyes a little wider, open your ears a little bigger.
It sounds like you need to open your ears.
Yeah, open your ears a little bit bigger. You know, understand what is being said, why it's being said. Understand symbols in movies and realize that you can't watch movies, you can also observe movies. And when you observe and watch, you get to have a whole nother level of pleasure at the movies. And I highly implore anybody not to just sit there and have movies come at them, but meet them in between, and you'll have a better time every single time. Well, I've been Cooper Carr. Thank you guys so much for making it to episode 3.5. I guess this is 3.5.
Yeah.
We'll bring the full episode 4, full-fledged, probably next week with Neil. Again, thanks for listening, guys. Appreciate it.
Kyle Montgomery, thank you all for listening. We'll be back in a week.
All right. See you guys. Have a good one. Don't stop watching movies.